And we are joined now by Mark Dorison, chair of the Orange County Board of Commissioners and managing attorney for the UNC Center for Civil Rights. How are you today?
Oh, it's always good to see you, Aaron. But, you know, it's been a pretty grim week,
yeah.
You know, between the Board of Governors acting to shut down the center last, it seems like, you know, I can't believe it's been a week already. And
yeah.
So it's, you know, trying to figure out, what's going to happen next with the, you know, with the struggle for justice for, mm-hmm. for the folks that we represent and would represent. So that's, you know, trying to, figure out what to do in, you know, here during the denouement, I guess,
yeah.
Has been challenging.
So what developments have taken place in the last week? I know we talked last week immediately after the vote, obviously it was really raw. In the last week, I know there's been a lot of discussions about, okay, what next? So where is the center now?
Well, those discussions are just starting. And
mm-hmm.
and so that, you know, one of the things that has been raised again is the possibility of whether the center could be turned into a clinic at the
mm-hmm.
law school. You know, the Board of Governors policy has a special exemption for a clinical program. So there's some discussion beginning around that topic, and you know, at the law school administration and at UNC Chapel Hill administration, there's also ongoing and continuing discussions about the possibility of picking the center up and taking it someplace else,
mm-hmm.
either to another law school or you know, folding it into becoming a program or project of part of an existing
mm-hmm.
social justice organization. So the dust is starting to settle. We're trying to figure out exactly the scope of the policy itself. There are some grandfathering provisions about cases that we're already engaged in, and we have legal ethical obligations under the rules of professional conduct and the state bar for those cases. So we're in the process of sorting that out, seeking advice from the state bar, from the university legal counsel, and from the law school. But you know, we're certainly trying to move forward quickly
mm-hmm.
to keep the work going forward.
What actually is the difference? You mentioned turning the center into a clinic, maybe. What actually is the difference between a center and a clinic?
Well, substantively, I don't think there's any difference. I mean,
mm-hmm.
the main thing about a clinic is that the students who have to be, you know, have completed 3 semesters of law school, so they're advanced students, they are the lead counsel in the cases, supported by the clinic faculty, who are the, you know, who are professional lawyers who
mm-hmm.
provide their guidance. So, but from the standpoint of the clients or the work being done, I don't really think there's any difference. I mean, one good thing about the center not having been a clinic formally is that we've been always integrated law students in the work from the minute they get on campus.
Mm-hmm.
So 1Ls, first year law students. We bring them right in and put them to work, actually doing the work that lawyers do, of course, you know, under the close supervision of
right.
the staff.
Okay. So speaking with Mark Dorison, and for people who still care about the center, who still want to help, what can people do now?
Well, people can, I think, continue to, you know, raise the profile of what's happened. And there is a group has set up a group called the Friends of the Center, has set up a fund that folks can contribute to. They can write checks to the check should be made out to CCSH/Friends of the Center for Civil Rights, and they get sent to Jim Overton at the Center for Community Self-Help. It's P.O. Box 3619, I believe, Durham, NC 27702, and we're working on getting an online, or they're working on getting an online contribution as well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
is there a
website
that people can go to?
That's in the process
okay.
as well. But folks who are interested can contact me, you know, any way possible, through any electronic or telephonic means they want, and I can provide them more information.
All right. Speaking with Mark Dorison again, with the Center for Civil Rights, and again the work of the center and the work of anyone who is active in the fight for civil rights is just as vital and just as important today as any day in our history. And I mean, we're talking this week about the fact that it's been a little bit slower news week locally than it was maybe last week or the week before, but nationally certainly not the case. And one of the things that we're getting from the CBS reports today is protests in St. Louis because another judicial decision comes down exonerating a police officer who fatally shot a black man in St. Louis. So that continues to go on, and that continues to underscore the importance of continuing to talk about civil rights as something that's present and not past, which is, I think, part and parcel of this debate that's been going on all year. Is the civil rights issue present or past? It's very much present, and that's why the center's important.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I think there is a segment of the population that believed, or maybe still believes, but certainly believed until the recent events, mm-hmm. that the fundamental issues of civil rights were resolved, you know, in the late 60s and early 70s when the Jim Crow, you know, legally mandated segregation was eliminated, mm-hmm. when the Civil Rights Act of 1964 passed that eliminated, you know, overt discrimination in housing and employment, and the Voting Rights Act passed. But what we know is that there's a difference to saying that the law requires you to stop discriminating, sort of stop overtly mm-hmm. discriminating, and taking steps to create an integrated and inclusive society. Mm-hmm. And it's not enough just to stop doing the overt discrimination. We've got to then begin to work to remedy the legacy, you know, the centuries-long legacy that discrimination has wrought. And mm-hmm. so the disparities in policing, the disparities in, you know, issues of mass incarceration, the disparities in access to higher education and access to quality K-12 education that have been with us all along are at last starting to come more into the public conscious. So, mm-hmm. I mean, if there's any silver lining to the renewed efforts to roll back civil rights and to divide us is that more people are engaged in the struggle, and, you know, as the, to use the you know, the colloquial phrase, are woke.
Yeah. So let the record show you scare quotes on woke. So
well, I
you gotta yeah.
You know, because I can't pull that off. You know, I'm not. You know. I'm just a country lawyer.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know.
Speaking with Mark Doris, and again, we've been talking about the Center for Civil Rights. Let's turn to county commissioners news, because you all just had a meeting on Monday.
That's
and
right.
The meeting schedule is underway. Like, work for county commissioners is ongoing. We've been reporting all day today on the vote to push for clean energy by 2050, 100% clean energy by 2050, which is great. Again, another key goal that the county's had, working towards that. What else is going on that people ought to know about on the county commissioner's level?
Well, the meeting on Monday was real interesting. It was a public hearing around issues related to agribusiness and agritourism. Mm-hmm. So the state legislature has created some very broad statutory provisions to support agriculture and farmers across the state to try to, you know, provide additional economic support for them. And so farms generally are exempt from local zoning control, from a whole host of local regulations. And now that the legislature has adopted this broad definition of agritourism, to support farmers and agricultural economy, those practices and businesses fall also under these local exemptions, mm-hmm. or exemptions from local regulation. And so in lots of very rural places that have been hit hard economically, these provisions are uncontroversial, right? Farmers who have on their farm a winery or a petting zoo or camps for kids. But in places like Orange County and Asheville and Buncombe County, for example, and some places in Guilford, it's a little different question. And so there are concerns by lots of folks who live in rural areas in Orange County that folks are taking advantage of this exemption of regulation to really push business enterprises for which the farming aspect of it is incidental, that it's not really a farm that has an incidental business to support it, but it's a business that is relying on these legislative exemptions.
That also grows things on the side.
That's right. To,
yeah.
And so
is that the wedding venue debate?
Yeah, so there's been lots of controversy about the wedding venue in Orange County. There's other folks. So this hearing was designed to hear from residents and get an understanding of, you know, we also, the county commissioners, have an interest in protecting farmers and promoting agriculture and maintaining that rich agricultural legacy of Orange County. But we really wanted to hear from folks about how do we balance that interest with protecting residents, rural residents, from the kind of secondary impacts that may occur, like noise and traffic and lights. And so we had it was a great meeting. We had, good turnout. A couple of dozen folks came out and told us about their experiences and what they were concerned about. And they raised a number of good questions, and we're going to start looking at our ordinances and policies and see how really we can accommodate these two goals in a way that is as respectful as we can be for everyone's interests.
So. I was just thinking about that, listening to you talking, like there's so much in terms of agritourism that's actively happening right now. I think about the McKee corn maze and the blueberry farm that Bernadette Pelissier has, and like the list goes on and on and on. So that's a really significant part of Orange County's economy now.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and the example people always think about is Maple View Farms,
yes.
Right?
Oh, so, God, yeah.
But yeah, so how do you balance that with the otherwise rural character of these areas and the interests of folks who moved into or live in those areas because they appreciate that rural character?
Yeah. So what's next for that issue? Is it just going back and looking at possibly an ordinance or?
There were a lot of good questions raised, and it was our staff was there. And so I think there are a number of possible things we can do to our ordinances to make them more clear about what types of secondary impacts can be regulated and which can't. Representative Greg Meyer was there. He talked about the work of the legislature. There's going to be a study commission this year to look at this very issue but he also explained the issues of preemption by the state legislature. So we're going to look at what we can do, what possible things we can do in the county to sort of mitigate the most egregious of those secondary impacts. And also, hopefully, we will work with this study commission, and we've asked folks who came out to the meeting to follow that commission and testify in front of it as well, so that we can maybe get some better coordination from the state on these questions.
OrangeCountyNC.gov, if you're listening out there, is the county's website if you want to get more information. We're speaking with Mark Dorison, who's the chair of the Board of County Commissioners. What else is going on in Orange County that people ought to know about?
Well, there's lots of great, exciting stuff happening this weekend, which you already mentioned. There's going to be an important conversation about racial equity in Chapel Hill-Carrboro schools tomorrow. There's the Hog Day, which is always a great celebration of community, just coming out and people being together. I'm interested to hear about your First Amendment conversation.
There is so much to talk about with freedom of the press, so I still have no idea. Like, it's a 20-minute talk that you have to give, and there's four of us, so we're all going to be presenting on sort of different aspects of the same thing. There are 100 different things that you could say, so I'll be interested to hear what I have to say, too, because right now I have no idea.
Well, it's going back to your point about sort of the general increased consciousness about racism, race discrimination, institutional racism in our society, in our country, it's a really great time for these conversations to be happening, because one of the things I feel like I'm seeing is we're sort of getting out of these compartments that we have. So the First Amendment, for example, we're not just talking about a free press and what that means. It's really now in the context of, you know, who can come and speak on campus and what protesters should be allowed to do or say. And these conversations about the Confederate monuments and how they fit into the broader discussion. So it's exciting to sort of see the links being made and being mm-hmm. recognized. So I'm going to try to come out there.
Yeah,
on Sunday.
I'm looking forward to it. And there's an interesting question, especially now that there are 1,000 different and more than 1,000 different media outlets that you can, if you have a particular political worldview, you can find a news outlet that tells you exactly what you want to hear. So that's, of course, what everyone gravitates towards. The role of the media as a gatekeeper is no longer what it was 30, 40, 50 years ago. Simultaneously, the news media has become so much of a business compared to 50 years ago that news outlets don't even want to play that role. They want to tell people what they want to hear because that's how you get clicks and page views and advertising sales and ratings on TV and sales of newspapers and everything like that. So those two things are pushing against each other. It's a really interesting time. And then you get to the question of if the gatekeeper role isn't played, who does serve as the gatekeeper? Who is the one that's responsible for saying, yes, everyone has the freedom to express themselves and speak their minds, but if we're going to be handing a microphone to someone and amplifying their voice, we could hand a microphone to any one of a million people. Who do we choose to hand it to? And that's a real responsibility that I think people need to take up.
I think that's exactly right. You know, yeah. there's all those questions are built in together. You know, the question
right,
of the business
right.
and the media, and you know, who has the microphone, who is the gatekeeper. I mean, there were obviously reasons why it was valuable to knock down the gatekeeper and mm-hmm. create access for people who otherwise wouldn't have had
any access at all. Yeah,
and then there's also questions about the responsibility. So you know, there's yep. there's all the stuff around Facebook and Twitter about you know what. Are they just a platform and do they have no responsibility, or do they have some gatekeeping authority even if it's not on the substance of the things, but to eliminate, you know, sort of, you know, violence, hate-filled mm-hmm. rhetoric, you know, where is that line being drawn? So
yeah.
I'm glad that you're taking part in it. And I'm also glad, you know, to come out here on Fridays and do this, because I do think having the local, you know, the thing that's great about CHL is it still has this very localized focus, but I know you work very hard to keep that in context, you know, with what's happening at the state level and at the national level. And that's the thing that people really, you know, that's how we live our lives. So it's important that we're able to do that, kind of zoom in and zoom out.
Yep. Speaking with Mark Dorison, OrangeCountyNC.gov, for more information about the county government. Before we let you go, Board of County Commissioners earlier this year authorized $15,000 to serve as a matching fund for donations to the Veterans Memorial. I know the county is still in the process of getting out the word and calling for donations. How is that going?
I don't have a specific dollar amount update, but I know that is a priority of the commissioners and of the staff, and so there was a nice groundbreaking earlier this year. A lot of folks attended. It's a beautiful site out there on the Southern Human Services Center campus. And so, you know, I'll next week put in a bigger plug for that so we can get some donations. I think it'd be great.
All right. Mark Dorison, thank you so much.
You're welcome.